Red Eyes. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Henrik Pongren. RedEyes.tv is the website. You can also hear us on YouTube, Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Spreaker, and a few other sources as well. We have all the links from RedEyes.tv and RedEyesMembers.com. We also do cover a lot of videos, by the way. We do a lot of videos that you can check out. We do a live TV show, Weekend Warrior, that you can also watch. It's exclusively available at RedEyesMembers.com. Some really well-produced segments there. Topics ranging from the metapolitical to more alt-right topics to even some entertainment and culture news and things like that. So we do try to have some laughs as well, cover the more humorous side to the culture war and the absurdity of it all. So definitely check out the show. It's at redicemembers.com. Also, just quickly want to mention that we are redesigning the whole members website. It takes a bit to do that because we're building it from the ground up. We want to do it in the right way. So it's taking a bit longer time, but it is coming, folks. So thank you for your patience. It will be worth it, trust me. All right, so our guest today is Andy Nowicki. He is the author of several books, including The Columbine Pilgrim, Heart Killer, Confessions of a Would-Be Wanker, Considering Suicide, and Notes Before Death, to mention a few of his titles, some green titles there, folks. But welcome back, Andy. It's good to have you back again. How are you?
I am good, Henrik, and as always, it's great to be with you, and it's very exciting to see how Red Ice has grown in leaps and bounds in the year and a half since the last time we talked.
Yeah, definitely. We're trying to branch out, as you know, a little bit more in TV. We're doing a live TV show now. We're bringing in a lot of new segments, try to do more up-to-date things as well. And yeah, it's growing. A lot of folks on the YouTube channel now, around 111,000 subscribers. That's good. You know, we're getting there, so we'll see. But we have huge plans, you know, so we're not done by any means of the imagination. We can grow this into something really big and powerful. And I think we need it too, by the way, because of course one of the things we're talking about today is the whole fake news issue. We'll get into that later. We want to focus first of all on the actually back in the trenches, as it were, of the Pizzagate scandal that was raging a few months back, and that will get us into, you know, the fake news claim and everything like that as well. Just briefly tell us the new book that you were writing on the subject, Andy. When is that due out?
Well, it's out right now. It's been out for about 3 weeks now, and the title is Meta Pizzagate. Meta-Pizzagate. You could find it on Amazon, and I've read some excerpts from it, which can be found at the alt-right blogspot. Actually, it's at my SoundCloud page, but there are links to it from, and there's actually several articles that have been published that are excerpts also from the book Meta Pizzagate. And so it was published, I think the day was April 30th, and so it's out right now, it's available, and it's really, you know, I'm not usually a timely or you know, a topical kind of author, but to me, this really couldn't be more important of an issue of what's going on right now.
Yeah, I agree. It has huge implications. It always did. It never arose out of the void. It was something which had much deeper and longer connections back into history. We'll get into some of that. But just from a mainstream point of view, obviously, this has been, I guess, more or less debunked, right? This was just a big joke. It was just a silly kind of conspiracy. It, of course, led to that shooting in the actual pizza place, you know, Comet Ping Pong. But let's just listen to a clip. This could kind of set us off, I guess, in the direction we want to go here. It's by Brian Stelter on his appropriately termed Reliable Sources show on CNN, right? So let's just listen to, like, you know, he summarizes kind of the mainstream view on this.
Fake news, real gunfire. A North Carolina man arrested in a D.C. pizza shop after brandishing a gun, telling police he was there to investigate a conspiracy theory called Pizzagate.
One of the hosts runs up and is like, did you see that guy? You know, he had a big gun.
We actually thought initially that he was a staff member because he was walking straight for that back room. Staff member, you know, kind of looked at me and indicated that this was a gunman.
Edgar Welch appearing in court this afternoon. According to police, Welch said that he had read online that the Comet Ping Pong restaurant was harboring child sex slaves, and that he wanted to see for himself if they were there. The suspect said he was armed to help rescue them. The accusation came from this unhinged story that originated online days before the election, saying that Hillary Clinton and her campaign chairman John Podesta were operating a child sex ring. The lie took root in the digital swamps of Twitter and far right-wing websites.
we're not covering Pizzagate enough, even though we covered it every day, to expose the Satanism and the occult and the code words for pedophilia.
October 30th, a Clinton-hating, Trump-loving Twitterer claimed a police source said Clinton was at the center of a pedophilia ring. Others latched onto this, seemingly hoping it was true, scouring dark corners of the web for possible clues.
Dark corners.
This is how conspiracy theories are threaded together, lie by lie. Eventually a name stuck, Pizzagate, and the believers started harassing the owner of the pizza place.
We've received many, many, many calls, but really they're from around the world, so we didn't expect anyone to come.
On Sunday, the suspect fired his weapon. No one was hurt. With detectives still on the scene in D.C., Pizzagate believers were already claiming that this real development was just part of a cover-up.
The media is claiming that this is because of Pizzagate. This is very dangerous fake news. Anybody claiming that the gunman today at Comet Pizza had anything to do with Pizzagate is lying.
All right, so there it is, Andy. You know, so yeah, this is just the mainstream kind of view on it, the fake stream news. But this, the Edgar Madison Welch, you know, the triple name shooter, right? Appropriately arrived at a time when things were really starting to take off, actually, and a lot of people were active. They were getting out on the streets. They were standing outside of Comet Ping Pong. And eventually, this is what also seemed to have led to the fact that both YouTube and Twitter started cracking down on people producing content about Pizzagate, right? So it was a perfect kind of timed event. And I'm not saying that there aren't loons out there or, you know, that decide to act on their own and they're truly concerned about, you know, a real phenomenon and stuff like that. But what do you think about the shooter that showed up?
Well, I don't know much about the incident itself or the alleged incident itself. I've, you know, read some things and heard some things from people who seem credible, who smell a rat, I guess, who think that this was an orchestrated event to more or less, you know, get advance the idea that those who are investigating Pizzagate are just unhinged, like the guy in the report you just played, one of the many, you know, words, one of the many disingenuous things that he uttered was, you know, saying this is an unhinged conspiracy theory, quote unquote. And, you know, so I don't know. It could be an artificially implanted or, you know, a orchestrated event, or it could be real. It could be somebody who actually is sort of off his rocker a little bit and who heard all these things and wanted to send a message but failed spectacularly. I mean, apparently he went and fired a shot at the computer or something, you know, thinking that there were child sex slaves in the basement or something like that. If that was what he was, you know, if he was trying to rescue children, it sure didn't seem like he was all that concerned or all that, engaged in what supposedly was his task at hand. But
yeah,
I regardless of whether the event itself, the shooting event, which was not really calling it a shooting is kind of misleading because there was nobody in danger of being shot. I don't even know if anybody was there. There were shots fired. There was a shot fired that hit a computer screen or something like that. But putting all of that aside, what has struck me about the let's call it the mainstream cover. You know, there's all these different buzzwords that are used to as shorthand to talk about certain certain things like mainstream media or what have you. But I'll just stick with that particular shorthand, mainstream media. When you hear reports like the one that was just played, or articles that were written in the New York Times, that were published in the Washington Post or in other mainstream publications, and they all just screamed that this story has been debunked. They use this word debunked, you know, however many times, umpteen times. And there, what amazed me, you know, what made my jaw drop really is, and, you know, because I believe that the press, is dishonest. I've believed that for a long time, but the degree of dishonesty that was displayed in this, in these kinds of stories, and what eventually emerged as the quote unquote fake news campaign, the campaign against quote unquote fake news, was just truly took intellectual disingenuousness to a new low. Because, you know, again, paying attention to, or let's just taking the report that you just played, and I hadn't heard that one before, actually, but it's entirely substance-free. I mean, what they say is these ideas are crazy. They summarize the ideas in a way that is extremely disingenuous. They say, you know, all these people think that that there are child slaves in the basement of this DC pizzeria and that Hillary Clinton is directly involved or something like that. You know, they try to make it sound as lurid and as ridiculous as possible. And, you know, the people investigating Pizzagate, you know, never thought that it was that this operation was limited to something going on in the basement of a DC pizzeria. You know, it was a right. much more involved kind of a notion that went out in all kinds of different directions, and there was all kinds of evidence that was being looked at. And it's astonishing to me how these mainstream sources never, these mainstream media organs, you know, whether they're TV or print media or internet media, they never go into any of the allegations in anything resembling, you know, detail.
But they're ridiculous at face value. That's why they don't have to, right? It's always like that, isn't it? The claims are ridiculous, so we don't even have to do that.
which
I think over the straw man argument, right?
They go for the to say. They also have the gall to say that it's been debunked, or that's discredited, or that this is fake news. But they don't tell us why it's fake news. They don't tell us how it or where it's been debunked.
No.
You know, I've yet to hear any mainstream source talk about details in the Podesta emails, for example. I've yet to hear any mainstream source, you know, really show us, with one exception, and that is Ben Swan, who I don't know if you've heard of him or not. He's a newsman in Atlanta, actually, which is the town where I'm from. And he came out with a report which just sort of said, well, you know, look at it. These are the details. This is what's being alleged. He didn't come out one way or the other saying that he was a believer in it or not. But he was just sort of, to coin a phrase, fair and balanced. And he, for that, of course, they shut him up. You know, they came after him, and he had to go dark and basically not have a voice in the media anymore. I think he still appears as an anchor on the news in Atlanta. I'm not sure. I don't live in Atlanta now, so I can't say for sure. But he is one of the only exceptions to the rule. The vast majority of the media, when they talk about Pizzagate and other stories as well, you know, most recently, most topically, this Seth Rich story, which maybe we can get into later.
Sure. Yeah.
In its relation to all of this. But whenever they talk about it, they never examine specifics. They never tell us, you know, I would have respect for a mainstream source or for any source if they actually tried to grapple with, here's the allegations and here's why we think they are false and here's why, you know, here's the debunking. But they never engage in the actual debunking. They just tell us that it's been debunked. And, you know, if we say, well, where, how, why, they have no answer, absolutely none. The degree of, you know, just, again, absolutely substance-free, you know, commentary on, and even Fox News, which is supposed to be, you know, questioning the liberal media narrative and all of that. Even, you know, they have this puff piece where they bring on James Elefantis, the owner of Comet Pizza, and just, you know, Megyn Kelly is just all over him, all feeling sorry for him and saying, oh, you've been through so much and, you know, you're such a victim, but never asking him any pointed questions at all and never letting him clarify anything.
Yeah, what about those
Nobody
pictures on your Instagram, buddy? What's that all about? Tying up kids
yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know, like, the words that was used, the I mean, they're just what people are listening to this who might be maybe didn't follow the whole Pizzagate story, or you're doubting it, or just like, this is nonsense, it's ridiculous. Because I think, as you said, Andy, it was a straw man argument that was set up. The claim was that, oh, it's just this pedophile ring, I guess, that's just run out of the basement of this one pizza place, right?
Mm-hmm.
None of the ties to the emails that were leaked, Podesta's emails, have been addressed. None of the weirdness in those emails, the obvious code words. Yeah, that they were using for this, and it's all over the web. You can just search for it, code words and pizza,
nothing about
cheese
the logos,
pizza.
Nothing about the logos, which have been, you know, which are FBI identified pedophile symbols, the logos that were on the menu of Comet Pizza, or the next door place Besta Pizza, or other institutions in the area, which I know you and Tara McCarthy, at the time she was just Reality Calls, I think, but you had her on. She was, of course, one of the early YouTubers who was broadcasting this stuff. She was, I think, one of the first ones I heard about it from. And
she did a great job. Yeah, she really got it out there. And she
was one of the first ones who got shut down, like you were talking about when they started, when the fake news campaign started. They started censoring her videos, and I think she eventually just had to get off YouTube and just post them on her own site. But it's amazing, it's incredible, and again, it even exceeds my capacity for cynicism. I mean, I never thought the media was the mainstream media, or even much of the alternative quote unquote media was necessarily all that interested in the truth. But I somehow thought that when a story is this big and this omnipresent, and, you know, this, where it's obvious that there are things here that are worth exploring, that are worth investigating, and we're talking about huge stuff happening on, and it's very conspicuously happening, you know, on a very, grand scale, on the higher echelons of power, you'd think they'd be all over it. But you think they would have to talk about it, but they aren't. They are desperately trying to cover it up. They're desperately trying to say that there's nothing there. And again, their commentary is absolutely substance free. Nobody has talked to Elefantis about his pictures on his page. Nobody's talked to Podesta about the material, the contents of his email. Nobody's asked about Sarah Silsby and how the Clintons bailed her out, who tried to kidnap a bunch of kids in Haiti, and how the Clintons and was put in prison in Haiti for child trafficking, and how the Clintons basically bailed her out.
Yep.
These things just aren't being talked about, and they're huge stories.
They are, and even this is weird things of even the location of the Haiti Help Fund, I guess, the offices of where this was run out of was just on that same street as Comet Ping Pong, and then there's Besta Street just down the road there, and there's like, it's, I mean, to a certain extent, if you just zoom in on one piece of it, it's like, well, it's a circumstantial evidence, but it paints a very big picture when you take all the little things in. And I also, at the same time, I will recognize that there is a danger in cherry-picking, you know, certain issues, or drawing the dots only between the things that you want to do and exclude and things like this. But I sincerely don't think that is what's going on here. It's just too much smoke to not be a fire. You know, I just can't see it any other way.
Yeah, but well, confirmation bias is always a possible issue, a problem, and any honest investigator or anybody who's honestly researching something should ask himself, am I engaging in confirmation bias? Am I considering everything that's possible here? Of course, all of that is true, but I think that an honest person looking at what's really happening, looking at the entire spider web of events and, you know, reports and scandalous behavior or weird, indecipherable code. There's so many components to it. Anybody who's honest, who really is looking at these things, and I know that some people just haven't looked at these things, and you know, I'm not saying everybody has to be obsessed with this kind of stuff
sure.
the way that I am,
yeah.
And the way that some other people are, but I think that anybody who really looks at it honestly has got to see that there are some real issues here that need to be addressed, that need to be investigated. Some people need to be asked some serious questions, at least, and nobody is being asked anything. You know, nobody's being held accountable. Podesta's not being held accountable. Neither of the Podesta brothers. The Clintons, of course, are not being held accountable. Elizondo's. None of these people who are involved are being called on the carpet in any way by anybody who's got any real power.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree with the fact that you shouldn't have the approach that they're guilty until, you know, proven innocent. I agree with that.
Right.
I just think that there should be an investigation. I just think that
yeah.
there's enough, you know, circumstantial evidence here for an investigative, a cop basically to come in and do some investigation and look into these claims, right? Because
yeah.
if it has ties like this to the higher ups in politics and even, you know, remember that too. I mean, it's been, you know, hammered out so many times now, but it bears repeating for maybe newcomers or people who can't remember the story, but I think it was GQ magazine that put James Elefantis on the list of the 50 most powerful people in Washington
right.
D.C. Right, and this is just a guy who's just, as far as I know, he's just running a pizza place. That's it. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like Washington D.C.'s most powerful place, probably on the planet, right? High rollers.
Oh, absolutely.
And then
absolutely.
This guy's on there. Why the hell is that? You know.
Yeah. Well, of course, he was in a relationship with David Brock. Who's
the Media Matters, Clinton. Right?
Yeah. And so that explains part of it, but yeah, it's definitely a striking thing that cannot be denied. And I think that this is also something. I mean, maybe to get back to what I was trying to do a little bit with my book, Meta Pizzagate. You know. I think that, and this is something you covered with Tara when you had her on your show back in November. This scandal, this issue, whatever you want to call it, that has become known by the somewhat silly sounding name Pizzagate, which basically alleges that there is child trafficking, there is pandering of children and of underage kids, sex trafficking, and also sexual abuse being committed by elites on, you know, in various levels of government and elsewhere, that this seems to be going on. Well, in a way, if you don't have any idea of the context, if you just hear these kinds of things, these kinds of allegations made, and you don't really know much about, the history of these kinds of stories, then of course it's going to sound ridiculous, like and you're going to dismiss it as loony and paranoid and just something that can easily be written off. But for me, in approaching this story, my entree into all of this was a few years ago, and I think I talked about this the last time I was on your show. A few years ago, I was reading about or doing some research into this event called the Franklin Scandal. And there's people who are listening to this, who this is the first time they've ever heard of the Franklin Scandal. I encourage you to look it up. You can find abundant materials that relate to it. But when I was looking into the Franklin Scandal, which was centered in Nebraska, and involved a bunch of high-level people. In this case, it was just about all Republicans. You know, Pizzagate is mostly about Democrats, liberal Democrats. The Franklin scandal pretty much all involved conservative Republicans. And a point that I make in the book is this is not really a partisan issue. Unfortunately, this infects all corners of the political spectrum, the power elite spectrum, whatever faction they happen to represent. But when it was, like I said, about 3 years ago, I was looking into the Franklin scandal and just sort of, greedily gobbling up whatever I could find, you know, kind of getting obsessed to some degree with it all. And then I remember at some point just having this break where I've heard other people talk about this, and it's not like I got as deep as one can possibly get, and you know, I have no direct relation to anything or anybody that is involved. You know, thank God, I don't want to know these people.
Right.
I don't want to know these kind of people. I don't want them in my life in any way. But it's somehow at some point, I don't know whether you want to call it. Maybe it would be grandiose to say it was some form of PTSD or whatever. I just had this break where I just felt overwhelmed by the extent of it all, and I just had to get away from it. It was just like I had to get a breather, and I just didn't want to think about it. It was like it was the worst. It was confirming the worst things I could possibly have imagined about. You know, it was like it was weird because just like I was talking about the press a moment ago, it's not like I've ever thought of myself as an idealist or as somebody who thinks, the government, they're all good people, you know, or they just want the best for the citizens of this country and so forth. And, you know, I never was that kind of naive person. Mm-hmm. I always sort of thought of myself as fairly jaundiced and cynical. But what the Franklin scandal suggested to me was that the most powerful people who are out there are, you know, deeply, not just deeply corrupt, but evil, and that they were preying on the innocent with impunity, and it really, really bothered me. And so I sort of had to put it aside, put it out of my mind, but I knew I had to get back to it in some way. And so all of this is sort of a roundabout way of saying there's a precedent for Pizzagate. Yeah, you know, they're not just the Franklin scandal, but the Jimmy Savile story, which I think you made reference to a few minutes ago, and that's common news now. Everybody knows that this somebody who was a high-ranking a member of the British media for decades, you know, just this household name, and after he dies, it suddenly comes out that he has had this long history of abusing children. And you can't tell me that it wasn't known.
The BBC covered for him many times.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's amazing.
And that's just one other, I mean, there are plenty of other, you know, there's the Dutroux case in Belgium. There are, and others that, there's the Presidio case in the 80s involving child abuse at the Presidio in San Francisco. There are so many. There's so much precedent to this story, and nothing ever gets done. These things crop up, and there are allegations made, and just like what happened with the Franklin scandal, you know, it all just successfully gets swept under the rug. And the only people out there who are not going to change their stories, you know, the kids who stuck to their guns and said, no, this really happened to me, the deep state or whoever, whatever you want to call them, came after them and you know, charged them with perjury. And so, you know, it was just an atrocity on a level that I couldn't deal with. And I just sort of had to not think about for a little while. But so somehow when November rolled around this past year and the Pizzagate stuff started to come out. First, it started with the spirit cooking, which is such a weird, weird story. But that was also something that Tara did a good job breaking, and some other people also were talking about. The spirit cooking story involving Marina Abramovitz and this weirdo performance artist and these satanic rituals that she was having and how she invited the Podesta brothers to her house for a spirit cooking dinner. And then what broke from that with, you know, involving the Comet Pizza Ping Pong, the Instagram page and the cryptic, references in the, that were found on several of the Podesta emails, either from John Podesta or from others writing to him, where they made reference to pizza or to cheese or to other kinds of ice cream, other kinds of food in this kind of nudge-nudge, wink-wink kind of way. That, and again, there's precedent for these, for this kind of communication being these kinds of terms being references to child sex, child sexual abuse.
Should remember too that some of the sentences and the way that it was used just didn't make sense. You know,
no.
Flying in hot dogs from Chicago for $500 or $50,000 or whatever it was.
You know, $65,000.
Yeah,
so it's hot dogs.
Weird things like that that just doesn't make sense grammatically. But of course, if you use the code word for them, it does make sense, right?
Yes, and these kinds of things that there is no innocent explanation for, and nobody's been asked any questions about since. And there's other things that I don't know. I mean, there are branches also, like the McCann case, the likenesses of John and Tony Podesta that seem to resemble a man or men that some witnesses claim to have seen when Madeleine McCann was kidnapped in Portugal.
Portugal, yeah.
Way back in, I think, 2003, you know, all kinds of stuff, which I don't know whether there's credibility. I don't know ultimately whether there's credibility to that particular branch of everything or not. But I do know the extent of everything that came out was overwhelming. And again, it wasn't, for me, speaking personally, it was like, okay, well, I guess I better get back into this now. You know, this was something that I just couldn't handle. I just had to get away from 3 years ago when it was, you know, the stuff involving the Franklin scandal. But now that this is happening and it's conspicuous and it's out there and people are talking about it.
In other words, if I can describe it this way, what we're talking about here is basically imagine like a fungi or something like that, right? A fungi is a huge organism that exists underneath the earth, right? The soil.
Right.
But now and then it pops up here and there as a mushroom, right? And we can pick those and you can see them visually and stuff like that. And that's basically what we're talking about. We're talking about an underground network of channels and contacts and people that occasionally spring up in seemingly maybe disconnected locations, right? You have, over in England, you have these claims, you know, how BBC helped to cover up Jimmy Savile, these kinds of things. Then you have stuff over in America where it pops up, like the Franklin scandal, and then later, of course, we have Pizzagate claims. But I believe that there is a interconnectedness of all these things. It's just we see it pop up its head and rear its ugly face occasionally here and there. And that's why. I also think that that's why this leads to people being picked off and taken out if they get too close and if they share just a little bit too much information about it, like as you brought up earlier, like Seth Rich, right? If it's true that he was the DNC leak, which was proposed to WikiLeaks, that's what set off the whole thing to begin with, right, with the Podesta emails and all that kind of stuff. So he would have been a source, right? So if he was actually talking about that and actually had inside info or knew more stuff, that he had to be taken care of, basically. That's what they that's what they did, I think.
And John Podesta writes in one of the emails that was uncovered. He writes, you know, whoever the leaker is, I am all for making an example of him.
Yeah.
And I mean that's right there. And I mean does that incriminate him as a murderer? No, but it is again like a lot of the other stuff we're talking about. It certainly does, you know, merit some attention. And it's not, it sure as hell isn't getting any attention from anybody who should be, whose job it is, you would think, to draw attention to things.
Yeah, why is this not on reliable sources, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think that what's interesting, a way things have changed since the time of the Franklin scandal, which was when that all broke, it was in the late 80s, early 90s. There was no social media back then. There was no internet. And it seems to me like they're having a harder time keeping things down right now because of social media, you know, and of course they've tried they've tried to crack down on what they call fake news. And the whole fake news crusade just so happened to start up when Pizzagate was getting out there and growing like fungus, as you say. They're doing, they're trying to get a hold on things, you know, to push it back down, to make people shut up about it. But it seems like it's a lot harder for them to do today. And that's leading to this kind of situation we have where more and more people are, let's say waking up, to use that metaphor. They're aware of what's going down. They're aware that things aren't what they seem, and that the media is lying to them, and that politicians are lying to them in a way that, you know, misrepresenting themselves in a way that goes beyond, you know, just the standard level corruption. Goes well beyond that, and because of social media, things are getting, you know, are boiling beneath the surface, and it's led to this somewhat unprecedented situation that I think we have right now, where there's a lot of social unrest just under the surface. I mean, I think things are still running around most of the West, most of the Western world. Speaking for myself here in America, you know, things are still on the surface running like they usually do, but something has changed, and who knows where things will go from here?
Yeah, exactly. Who do you think, or let's just profile the people a little bit too. I mean, I see these as globalists. These are the traitors that we're talking about. They are selling out their own people, their own nations. They are predators that prey on kids. They are, I think, part of a network which probably has by now how do we put this? They're operating in such a way that people who are invited into the network as a means and as a measure to control those people, to make sure that they have a leash, a noose around their neck, if you will, to be able to tug on that, to control them, make sure they don't, you know, run away, do things that are too unpredictable. They need some measurements of keeping a cohesive, organized,
blackmail.
Yeah, exactly. The blackmail issue of basically, you know, in some cases, this is what stories that come out throughout the years, right? About politicians being, you know, invited to some of these Eyes Wide Shut type parties, and there are hookers, there are prostitutes. There's, of course, the, you know, male, that kind of the gay stuff. But there's also, it seems to be another layer of pedophilia here. And basically, mm-hmm. this would be one of the best ways that you can imagine that you would control some of these people, right? You would, if you have videotape of them, going at it with a kid or something disgusting
right.
like that, I mean, they would, I would assume, never break ranks and talk about what they've done or whatever. They would be forever controlled. And I mean, we even had one of those stories in Sweden back in the 70s where they were attending a brothel, some of the politicians, and it came out that they had sex with underage girls, and this was actually a big liability because KJB was suspected to have used this against Swedish politicians to control them and stuff like this. You know, so this is commonplace stuff. It happens in most countries, it seems like.
Yes, I'm sure, and I'm sure that's been going on for a long time, and that's part of what I discuss in my book. Although it's something that's been pointed out many times before. You know, blackmail is certainly the best way of keeping things under wraps or keeping things in the club, if you will. The incentive to play ball and to
obey
on the
basically
to obey yeah. and to do what your masters tell you to do is because you'll be exposed, or they can hold that over your head. I think, though, I'm, and part of what I do in Meta Pizzagate is I try to discuss a little bit of who are these kinds of people that are drawn to this power elite. I mean, I guess in some ways, some people are probably just born into it, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Bushes, and so forth. And there are powerful families and bloodlines and all of that, but there are also probably people who start out, who find their way up, who have this desire to be in this club that rules everything. And, you know, I sort of tried to, and this is similar to what I, the last time I was on your show, I talked about my book, Conspiracy, Compliance, Control, and Defiance. And in that book, I talked about how there was a certain type of person who I, in my estimation, seemed most drawn to, or most likely to become a world ruler, you know, either this is what they're just born into, and so they just, this is just the way they are, or they just kill off what's recognizably human about them, and they just become, I referred to them as reptilians in this other book, which I meant metaphorically. A lot of people took me literally, even though I was always very plain that I wasn't talking about DNA. I'm interested in David Icke and some of his ideas about things, but I wasn't going to go that far. As far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, they have the same DNA as the rest of us, but they are reptilian in their nature, in their cold-bloodedness.
Yeah, there are complexes a bit more dominating in their brain structure than among others. There's a psychopathic, you know, nature and tendencies to these people as well. They don't have the emotional kind of connectivity that we have, etc. You know, so yeah, that makes sense to me. You know?
Yeah, an absence of empathy, a propensity towards ruthlessness, as sort of, let's say, a sadistic orientation where cruelty is just fun.
Getting ahead by any means necessary, even if this means, you know, doing what the Brotherhood tells you to do. You know, if that's like, go have sex with a kid and we'll film you, and then you can be part of this. You'll get the job or whatever it might be, right? And so they do it because they're more interested in getting ahead. And eventually, I think some of these people get so sick. If they're not, I mean, obviously, the process itself is going to weed out those that are incapable of doing these things, understandably. And they're going to be told probably like, you know what, you don't talk about this, right? If you do, you're out, you're dead. That's it. But if you agree to those things, you're going to have a particular quality already. And I want to just mention one more thing here, Andy, because I don't think that this is a monolithic conspiracy, that this is the only game in town. They control absolutely everything. They have everything under control, under wraps, some kind of monolithic, you know, Illuminati conspiracy where it's all, I don't buy that.
That would be defeatist if we said they're just all powerful and they're all terrible and there's nothing we can do.
Right, right.
Which I definitely don't want to give that impression.
And I think also that that doesn't mean that they control everything. I think that there's a lot of different interests, a lot of different groups that sometimes overlap and they interlock. Other times they compete for power and influence. I just think it's probably one group that has a particular methodology which has advanced itself very high up there because their tactics are uniquely ruthless, right? What do you think?
Right. I do. I agree. And I think where we get tripped up, where, speaking for myself, where I think I've gotten tripped up in the past is, you know, we tend to, you know, if you have a recognizably human orientation, that is to say, if you have empathy, I mean, and people who have empathy, normal people, can still do terrible things. You know, it's not like we're perfect angels. You know, we understand what it is to feel temptation. But I think that when we, you know, generalize from what we know and we look at these kinds of people, these high echelon people who, and again, you're probably right that not everybody who's in the power structure is like this. It's not a monolithic thing. It's not a uniform thing. But when we look at these kinds of people, let's just say, you know, to cite an example, when we look at somebody like Hillary Clinton, and others like her, we sort of try to see them in a sympathetic way by saying, well, you know, they're human too, and again, when I cite Hillary Clinton, I don't mean to be singling out liberal Democrats because, like I was saying before, this is a non-part. This to me, I think, goes beyond partisanship, and you know, different ranks of there's different factions representing different positions all across the spectrum, from the right to the left. But I do think that, you know, we look at these kind of people, and in trying to understand them, we generalize from what we know, and that the problem is they are different. I mean, I'm convinced that this kind of person, this sort of personality, is just different from who we are, from how we are. And so there's a sense in which they just cannot be understood, because for them, and I discussed this in Meta Pizzagate a little bit, my theory, my surmise about all of this, for them, there's this embrace of an inverted morality. You know, what we tend to think of as right and wrong, they tend to flip that over, and, you know, and so for them, you know, there's, and again, I make the comparison to, you know, although there's evidence of Satanism and indulgences in satanic ritual, and there's references in the some of the Podesta letters to things like I sacrificed a chicken to Moloch in the backyard.
Right, where chicken is, of course, slang for a little girl, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly, or for young child or something, yeah, something yeah. like that. And references to Thelema and Moloch and other things like that, which, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying that they're all Satanists in the notion in the from. I don't know whether they go in for all the ritualistic stuff and necessarily believe in it, but I do think that there is an inverted morality on their part, and there must be something about this type of person that's drawn to power, drawn to, you know, in this way. Of course, and there are other people who can be drawn to power for the right reasons and who it's possible not to get corrupted. That's surely true. But it seems like among this kind of person, there's a thrill to transgressing in the worst, what we would think of as the worst possible way, whether we're religious or not, you know.
They get off on that, right? It's a power, somehow they feel power, they can do whatever they want. I think it's probably some kind of jadedness as well. A lot of these people have incredible resources and funds and power, and you know, what's there left for them? They need another thrill, another. I mean, these are, I think, also people that are very, very empty inside to a certain extent. I mean, I know that's kind of a cliche, you know, just because they're rich and powerful doesn't mean you have to automatically be an evil person, but to a certain extent, I think that there's something lacking there, and they're seeking new ways of basically just fulfilling that need to just feel something overall. I don't know.
Yeah, and why are they drawn to child abuse, child sexual abuse? What is it about that? To me, it does seem to be the case that, you know, in iteration after iteration, we see this kind of behavior among the powerful, and, you know, including Pizzagate. And in some cases, there might just be a sort of cynical employment of it, just like knowledge that, like with child sex trafficking, knowing that there's a need, or knowing that there's not a need, but a desire, there's a market for this kind of thing, and making it available, which is probably part of what, you know, the Clintons are doing and have been doing in Haiti, and why they were covering up for Laura Silsby, who was trying to, you know, take kids out of Haiti and probably to have them, you know, pandered elsewhere, and have God knows what done to them. But I think there's also, so part of it is probably just a desire to sort of cash in, just like the same reason that they're involved in probably organ harvesting, which George Webb has been talking about a lot, online, very interesting, YouTuber, worth looking into, organ harvesting, and also just things like drugs and arms and what have you. But it seems to me that there's also a part of this type of personality, which I'd called them reptilian before, but I don't use that term in my latest book, Meta Pizzagate, but it's still the same kind of personality type. I think there is among this personality type a desire to defile and to defile the innocent.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
That's that in itself. That's the worst. That's like the like the, there's something that they derive a sense of power from transgressing, you know, in the worst possible way from the moral code as it is understood among most people. And
some of them might have been subjected to this themselves, actually, which is seems to
right.
be another factor that, you know, you continue the abuse, you continue the trauma. It's a cycle that seems to set in where, you know, when these people end up in a position of adulthood, there seems to be some psychological mechanism where they basically want to subject their kids or other kids to the same thing that they experienced for some
right.
reason. You know, I don't know why,
yeah.
but it seems to be part of it.
Yeah, and I mean, there's lots of, you can look around and do some research. There's, you know, plenty of evidence of programs like MK Ultra and other sorts of similar dealings, events, behaviors that these kinds of programs whereby. Children have been systematically abused, you know, in the worst possible ways, traumatized, in order to, you know, supposedly create this type of person to make them, what's the word, split off from themselves. I can't think of the word right now, but it's
disassociation, right?
Disassociation. That's right. That's the word I was looking for. It makes it to cause this disassociation, whereby they can be controlled and enabled to do things. And it does seem to be, I mean, that's even mainstream. I mean, this part of this stuff was actually admitted to. And
yeah, definitely. There's even a new movie, by the way. I think it's called Split. I think it's the M. Young
yes.
Chalaman or whatever the hell his name is.
Yes.
But he did.
Yes.
You know, they cover this kind of stuff quite regularly. And it's just it's a fact. It's a known phenomenon, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it does seem to be. And so you do have these kind of systematic abuse taking place. And who knows, maybe some of these people who are systematically abused in this way, they have their humanity just bred out of them.
Yeah.
In these kinds of, with this kind of systematic abuse, and they become these kinds of people. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break in a little bit here. I want to talk a bit more about where to get the book, but let me just read this couple of paragraphs here about a story, and we'll continue to talk about this on the other side. But more connections between pedophilia and the Clintons. So Daily Caller, 2016, reported Jeffrey Epstein, the, quote, billionaire pedophile who was accused of keeping underage girls as sex slaves on his private island, right? It was called Pedophile Island.
Right.
Was long known to be friendly with former President Bill Clinton. The extent of that relationship, however, has never been made clear, but new records indicate that former leader of the, quote, free world was much cozier with Epstein than originally known. So records obtained by Fox News show that Clinton was a much more frequent flyer on a registered sex offender's infamous jet than previously reported, with flight logs showing the former president taking at least 26 trips abroad the, quote, Lolita Express, even
right.
apparently ditching his Secret Service detail for at least five of the flights. So,
right.
pretty interesting.
That's
stuff.
Unheard of. How does a president, a former president, ditch his security detail?
I have no idea. Exactly.
That's just not supposed to happen.
No.
But,
no.
And so, yeah, and Hillary also was supposedly, you know, took some trips down to Lolita Island and plenty of other rich and powerful people. And I can't believe I forgot about the Epstein case. I mean, that's another,
there's
yet
so
another
many,
example.
There's so many of them, to be honest.
And
he was
actually arrested, but got a slap on the wrist,
yeah.
you know, for the worst possible crimes you could imagine.
He disappeared, didn't he? Just off
yeah,
the radar.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk more about Epstein and some of these other things in the second segment, Andy. But tell us then where people can get a copy of the book. Tell us a little bit more of some of the things that you do cover in it here in the few minutes we have.
Okay. Again, the book is called Meta Pizzagate. You can find it on Amazon. And if you're interested in looking into maybe whether you want to get it or not, you can read some excerpts, which can be found at Alternative Right, which is alternativeright.blogspot.com, the site that I co-edit, or I'm the assistant editor now with Colin Liddell. We've been on your show before, of course, a couple of years ago. And you can find some excerpts from it there. You can also find some excerpts. I read some excerpts from Meta Pizzagate on my SoundCloud page, which is JNOW1101. Again, it's my station on SoundCloud. But you could just, I think if you just typed in Meta Pizzagate, the title, and my name, Andy Nowicki, in the search engine, you can find excerpts which were published at Alternative Right and or which I read aloud at SoundCloud, my SoundCloud page. And so there's Meta Pizzagate. There's the book I published last year, which this is sort of, in my mind, a sequel to. And I should also say that book is called Conspiracy, Compliance, Control, and Defiance. There's an earlier Red Ice interview that I gave on that book. And
yeah.
And neither of these books are, I want to make it clear, you won't find original research in these books. So if you want to find some new scoop or something like that, this isn't the place to come. I want to make that clear. What I do is I'm interested in what's the significance of all of this. There's a lot of people out there looking into things and finding things, and they're doing great work. But my interest is, well, now that we know that these things are taking place, what does that suggest about what's going on? And so that's what I try to cover in both of those books.
Yeah, exactly. Very good stuff. A lot of material in the book also go through, of course, some of the emails and things like this, a lot of other aspects that we haven't discussed yet. But yeah, the bigger picture, kind of the analysis of this, what it means, the implications, the psychology of these people, the how they think,
right.
what's going on, why is this happening, right? So a lot of interesting stuff in the books. We'll add a link, obviously, to Meta Pizzagate from redice.tv and redicemembers.com. Check it out from there. You also have links to previous books there. So, we'll just take a brief break here, ladies and gentlemen. So stay with us. We'll be back in a second with Andy Nowicki as we continue to talk more about Pizzagate. Stay tuned.